life in radical audacity is saying, I'm living my integrity. I'm living in my authenticity. I'm listening to that person inside myself, my inner knowing, and I'm doing what I need to do, even if it's not easy.
If there's anything I've learned from my time caring for the seriously ill, it's to appreciate the extraordinary gift of this thing we call life. Hi, I'm Dr. Kathy Zhang, palliative care physician, author, and speaker, and my goal is to bring the clarity, purpose, and meaning often found at the end of life to help you live your best and most fulfilling existence now. I truly believe everyone on this planet has a purpose, and it's my mission to help you filter out the noise and discover yours. Let's get started. Hey everyone, you are in for a treat today. We have a special guest. Her name is Tiffany Kane. We talk all about radical audacity, finding your authenticity, living in your integrity, and leading from the heart. So she's a master of education. She's also the Heck Yes coach. She's an entrepreneur, public speaker, public educator, and writer who brings her passion for the art of the spoken word to people who need help finding their voice. She's passionate about coaching women to turn life's painful no's and life and business into empowered opportunities to find the yes. Tiffany's mission is to empower and educate women to elevate their voice and story through podcasting, writing, and other media. She's the founder of Casa Media Productions, as well as the host of two podcasts, Radical Audacity and Mastering the Podcaster Mindset. Take a listen. All right, everyone. Hello and welcome back to another episode of The Purpose Filter. We are so lucky to be joined by Tiffany Kane. Hi, Tiffany. How are you?
Oh, I am so fantastic. I'm so thrilled to be here on The Purpose Filter podcast. I love your voice. I love your topic. And I feel so honored to be here. So thank you.
I am so excited to have you here. It has just been so great to get to know you, to listen to you on your podcast, Radical Audacity. And I'm so excited to just get to start talking with you. So for our listeners who don't really know you, you know, I read your bio at the beginning, but I was wondering if you could talk us through kind of the earlier phases of your life up to kind of what you're doing now.
I think like most of us, we have defining moments in our life that kind of change the trajectory of where we're going. And it's those moments where we really have to look deep inside us and get that powerful inner knowing to know what's the next step. So for me, the first big inner knowing step was when I was about 19 years old. I had been raised in a cult-like religion that was very strict, very by the Bible, very women were subservient to men. We weren't allowed to say prayers out loud, and we had to wear head coverings if we were going to say prayers amongst women. If a man was present, he had to say the prayers. We were raised to, you know, girls get married and have children, and you don't date to find out what you want in a partner. You date to get married. And your whole job as a wife is to raise your husband up, support your husband, you know, that kind of thing. So when at 19, I realized this was not the religion for me, that morally, it didn't fit with me in any way, shape, or form. There was a lot of issues around homosexuality, where I just didn't feel like they had the right stance on it. Just so many issues were just morally, it didn't fit. So at 19, I left. And because it's a cult-like religion, that means I lost everybody and everything I knew, because that was my whole world. Not just religion, it was like who I was. So I lost my family, lost my friends. To this day, my mom and one of my sisters have no relationship with me or my children, because they stayed with the religion. So it was a really tough decision. And I think, Kathy, what for me, you know, my podcast is Radical Audacity. And I think when we make these radically audacious decisions in our life, they're just the decisions that are right for us, but they're often very difficult paths, a lot of pain. But we know so deep in our knowing that it's right, that we're willing to go through that pain because it's right. And so that was me. I packed up my little car, drove 3,000 miles across the country and started a new life. So that was kind of pivot point number one, or big thing number one. And then number two was I very quickly got into relationship. You can take the girl out of the religion, but a lot of that programming doesn't leave. And so I was still dating for the purpose of getting married, which means that I married somebody that was absolutely not right for me. I ignored all the red flags. I'd only known red flags in relationships my whole life. I hadn't known that you really had any choice to be with somebody where there are no red flags. So 19 years later, toxic marriage, abusive marriage, two children, my health was, well, I'd been hospitalized multiple times. I was on 12 different medications. I was literally dying from the stress, and it was the stress, and I decided to leave. And within 6 months, Kathy, I was off all medication except one and doing so much better. So that was my next radically audacious moment, you know? And then after that, it's like easier to be radically audacious because you've done the hard things. So those are kind of my two big things. I've got a third, but we can wait on that one. But yeah.
Oh my gosh. just listening to you talk about it, a few things strike me is this 19-year phase, right?
Yeah.
Like the first 19 years and then the second 19 years. But I want to unpack this a little bit more if we could. Just, you know, I think a lot of people feel sometimes trapped, or they feel like maybe there's a tug, right? How did you get even to the point? Let's say when you were 19, young teenager, this is all you've ever known. How did you even get to a point where you're like, this isn't right? This isn't for me. I need to leave. What was your thought process? What were you feeling? And how did you get to that decision then? And then in the second time around, you know, in a different situation, also very challenging to be able to be like, you know, I have a family, I have a partner, I have children. Mm-hmm. How did you get to that decision point?
Well, I talk about the first decision point was a moral decision. And my second decision point was a life-saving decision. So when you're 19, I don't know if you are fully cognizant and aware of why you're making decisions. But I think I've always been very self-reflective and always self-aware, like a lot of questioning, a lot of curiosity about what I'm thinking and what I'm feeling, coupled with being insanely loyal and wanting to be the good girl, wanting to do things right and all of that. So it's a tough dichotomy of constantly questioning, constantly being curious, but also wanting to be good and not wanting anybody to be mad at you and you know, wanting to be the shining star in whatever you do. It makes it tough. But I think at 19, there were a lot of factors, like perfect storm factors, that came together for me to say, I can't live this life anymore. My parents' relationship had disintegrated. It was just so horrible and unhealthy. Like I said, the LGBTQ issues, I'd had a teacher who was the first openly LGBTQ person I'd ever met, who I really loved and thought was a great human being. And yet my religion was saying that he was bad. And I just couldn't bring that together. And then my religion said that the only people that would be saved were the people in our religion. And I kept asking the elders, but there's so few of us. Why would God create so many people if he's only going to save just a small piece? And you know, and they would say, well, only the people that have the truth. And I said, well, how do we know we have the truth? You know, and I would ask questions like that and just be constantly told, well, sister, you need to have faith. You need to have faith. And it just wasn't good enough for me. Also, I wasn't allowed to go to college. And I just had this burning hunger for knowledge. So right around 19, I spent a summer in Sweden with some people that were of the same religion. But Kathy, getting out of my bubble, even though I was staying in the same religion, I was in a different country. And I remember, this is so silly, but I remember listening to the children speaking Swedish and turning to my friend who was Swedish and saying, how do the kids understand what they're speaking? Because to me, I was in such a bubble with my tiny little religion and my tiny little circle I lived in that it just didn't even make any sense that people could understand anything other than English. I'm 19 years old. That's so ridiculous. It's so ridiculous to have been that isolated. And those same friends took me to the local university. It was Uppsala is the town, and it's a very old town, and it's one of the oldest universities in that part of the world. And we walked into the library of the university in Uppsala, and it was like walking into a dream, kind of like the Beauty and the Beast, you know, when she walks into the library and it's like stacks and stacks of books and there's ladders to get up to the books. Well, this library was like that. It was floors and floors and floors of books. I don't know, it was six stories tall or something with a beautiful dome. And there were thousands of books, and I'm standing here looking, and there's students sitting at tables with books piled high and they're reading. And I turned to my friend and I went, I had no idea there were this many books in the world. I had no idea there was this much to learn in the world. And at that moment, my hunger and my curiosity became insatiable. And I went home from that trip 100% changed. I just could no longer stay in my tiny little bubble. I could no longer stay with these tiny little thoughts and these tiny little minds and this belief that we were the only ones that had it right. How, when there's those thousands and thousands of books and there's centuries of knowledge out there, how can our tiny little religion have it right and know everything there is to know? And that it was just a huge catalyst for me. Oh my goodness, I just could keep talking, but I'll pause for a moment.
No, that's so, and you know what, having spoken with you previously and knowing your love of books, that backstory makes so much more sense, because it is such a, like, almost cataclysmic moment in your life for you, right? It's just like, holy crap, this is what I've been missing out on. And this is what I need in my life.
It literally was like the angels started singing and the heavens opened, and oh my, you know, they talk about divine downloads and whatever. It was that moment I was in the most sacred space I possibly could be in, was this library. It was an complete out of body, holy experience. It was so beautiful.
That's so incredible.
Yeah. So,
and then I love that. I love, love that, especially. And I also love Beauty and the Beast. It's my favorite Disney movie. So the fact that you brought that up, I was like, yes, I know exactly what you mean. Okay. So phase two, another 19 years. I love what you said. I'd only known red flags in relationships. Mm-hmm. So of course that's what you sought out.
Yeah.
And so when you were in that relationship, you were unhealthy. It was, you were stressed out. You were on all these medications. And you said it was a life-saving decision, right? That, I mean, you know, I think for many people who perhaps may not have been in similar situations of abusive relationships, from the outside, they're just like, well, how could you stay in that for so long, right? But for people who have been in those relationships, can you tell us a little bit more about, you know, what you were thinking? When did you feel from the beginning that there was something, that there were red flags? Did you ignore them? Did you just say it'll get better? What was that like for you then?
I'm going to say all the above and more. Yeah. I can't speak for everybody in a toxic, abusive relationship, but I do think there are some commonalities. I know for me, my upbringing was a big part of it, in that I was raised to believe the man is, you know, the head of the house and the women are subservient. When you are raised in something like that, narcissists tend to gravitate to women like that, right? It doesn't mean you're not a strong woman. I'm always have been a very strong woman, strong-willed, strong-minded, but there was that battle inside me to be this good girl and this subservient wife and this, you know, homemaker and all of these things that kind of weren't really me. And it was a constant battle. And so that was one piece. So I don't know if that may not be a piece that's common with everybody, but I think on some level, as women, we get some of that social conditioning to be the nice girls and the good girls and the pleasers and the caretakers. And it's hard to stand our boundaries and stand strong and take our space and claim what's right for us. The second thing that I think is really common for most people in toxic and abusive relationships is the gaslighting is so fine that you often don't realize it's happening, and you tend to question your own personal sanity. They are so good at it. They're so good at it, at saying, oh, well, that didn't actually happen. You're imagining that. You're just emotional right now. I didn't really say that. I don't know what you're talking about. Well, you do always make it all about you, don't you? You know, and so things like that get told to you, or, well, those are your feelings, your emotions. I'm not in control of how you took my words. You know, you're constantly told these gaslighting things that make you question yourself, question your sanity, question your worth. And you do start going, well, did that actually happen? Did I make that up? Did he not really say that? And somehow I twisted his words, you know? And then they're very good at love bombing you, right? So you have these awful, terrible, crying, hysterical moments. And then the next day, you've got flowers and chocolates and I love you more than anything in the world and I couldn't live my life without you. And it's almost whiplashy. Like, wait a minute, yesterday you took great joy in seeing me cry. And he would tell me, I would say, are you enjoying seeing me like this crying? And he'd say, yeah, I do enjoy that. You know, and so the same person that enjoys seeing you in pain, that gets a high off that, would then love bomb you and you're the most important person in the world and I couldn't live my life without you and here's flowers and chocolates and, you know, I made this custom ring for you. And so it's whiplashy, right? And so you don't quite, your equilibrium's off and you don't quite know what reality is. And you are told so often that you would be nothing without that person, that without me, you are nothing. And you're told that so often that it's really hard to imagine a reality where you are without that person. Pink has a great song. Sometimes I'm like, Pink, were you reading my diary? Really? Were you reading my diary?
She's so good.
Oh, right. It's a beautiful song. And it is all about a toxic relationship, you know, where it's like, I love you. I hate you. Like, this must be true love because I hate you so much, you mm-hmm, know?
Right.
And it's that kind of push and pull. And you almost feel like that roller coaster is just how life and love is. And you kind of have no idea. And media, honestly, all the romantic love stories out there are insane roller coasters. There's very few healthy relationships shown in any movies.
Right, because that doesn't sell.
It doesn't sell. And so these toxic love affairs are touted. And so it's really hard if you don't have any healthy examples in your life and you were raised to be the subservient person to realize that life could be any other way. So I can't speak for all women in toxic relationships, but I know that those were kind of some of the perfect storm issues for me. Plus, you know, the whole religious upbringing of you don't get divorced, you know, you don't. And so, you know, that I really had to, you know, unlearn a lot of what I'd been raised with to get the courage to leave.
And how did you even, where did you even start to do that, right? When there's so much around you, when you have all, you know, I think one of the most difficult things for people who are on the verge of making, let's say, big decisions, big transitions, or even little transitions is our mind throws up so many barriers and blockades, even though the inner voice is saying, you know, there's something not right. There's something else. Maybe we should listen to ourselves. How did you even find that courage?
I certainly did not do it alone. I did not do it alone. It started with my dad saying, you need to call an abuse hotline. And I was like, what? Abuse? I'm not abused. I don't know what you're talking about. And I'm like, fine, I'll call. And when I called and told them what had been happening, they're like, we have to report this. I'm like, wait, what? That's not like, this is just okay. So it was kind of a wake up call for me. I hadn't realized I was living in an abusive situation. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of step one. Step two, I went into a group therapy for abused women. And that was absolutely the best thing I had ever done because they helped us stay healthy through it all. They helped us to realize our parts in it, to get rid of that victim mentality, because victim mentality is part of the drama triangle. You know, there's the perpetrator, there's the victim, there's the instigator, and we play all parts on the drama triangle. And so letting us see where are we at in that drama triangle and how do you take yourself off? And so group therapy was really good. I went through a 12-week program for abused women that was brilliant. I would take a little extra money out when I went to the grocery store in cash, just a little like $20. And because it was a donation basis, and I'd give my $20, and they had childcare. So I'd drop my kids off in their childcare and I'd go sit in this, I think it was about 2 hours or 3 hours of therapy for 12 weeks. And the learning was phenomenal. And then from that, I went into an individual therapy program as I was going through the divorce. So I didn't do it alone. And I don't think anybody can do it alone. And oftentimes your friends can't necessarily be the people to help you because some of them get very triggered. Some of them don't understand. And so you need to search out those experts that can help you. And that to me is my biggest piece of advice to anybody in a toxic situation is find those experts and those communities that can help you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, the two things that I heard from what you just said are support, help, and community, right? Because so often when we're struggling with our own problems, we think it's just isolated to us. I'm the only one going through this, and it feels so lonely. And it's even worse to feel like you're going through something alone when there are so many people who have the exact same thoughts, the exact same feelings, even in the exact same situations that we don't think anyone else could possibly be in this exact same situation.
Yeah. Yeah. And some people, yeah, it's just, you feel less crazy. You really yes. do. You're like, okay.
It wasn't just me.
It wasn't just me and these things I was feeling are real and valid. Like just have your feelings validated. Mm-hmm. That is just such a gift. It's such a gift. And you know, as awful as the whole process was and as painful, I'm so grateful I went through it because I came out a 100% different person. I would never call myself a victim of abuse, not even a survivor, because that feels very gray. You know, I kind of use that warrior term of like, I'm a personal warrior and I battled my way through all of the emotional trauma that I had to. And I'm not going to lie, there was PTSD for a long time. There would be things that would trigger me and I would find myself having a panic attack. But I got really good at setting boundaries and giving myself space and then starting to explore my world. And that kind of moves into the third phase, mm-hmm. is what I call the heck yes life. And that is just saying yes to opportunity as it came, to experience as it came. I joined a woman's cycling club. I hadn't ridden a bike other than like my little beach cruiser, right? I bought a road bike, joined a woman's cycling club and would ride every week 30, 40 miles. And then they said, hey, why don't you do the 65-mile bike race with our team? I was like, okay, why don't you do this 100-mile bike race with our team? Okay. And the confidence you gain by doing that, and then a different type of community of like badass women doing these amazing things was phenomenal. And then I started running marathons, and then I started coaching marathons. And then I started trying aerial dance, you know, where you hang from the ceiling upside down on hoops and silks and stuff. And I loved that. And I started performing that. And then I tried acro yoga. And, you know, that was so fun learning to count on other people and trust other people and learn new things about my body and the way it works and doesn't work. And just just trying things, right? I just went through this phase of my life after my divorce where I was like, I am going to try all the things and I'm going to have so much fun doing it. And some of the things I tried in, it didn't fit. I tried out rigger canoeing and I was like, eh, I don't like having somebody yell at me all day. It's not really relaxing. So I tried it and it didn't work, but it's just, you try things and you have fun and you go for it. And then podcasting was kind of my latest thing. And man, has that stuck. It's been such a joy to meet people like you and get to talk with the community of listeners. Oh my goodness, the gorgeous people in the community that reach out and you get to make these amazing human connections with. It's been the greatest gift in my life. And so that's, to me, that's the heck yes life of just life will throw you a poop sandwich, you know, and punch you in the face and kick you in the butt with health issues and financial issues and divorce and whatever. But in any of those situations, you can find the heck yes, and you can just fully embrace life.
Heck yes. That was the only appropriate thing to say after that. But yes, you know, and you're now like the heck yes coach. You have this Radical Audacity podcast. And I love what you said about just trying all the things, especially when after you make these big life transitions and decisions, you're kind of just like, what now? Right. Mm-hmm. And I know a lot of people, especially during the pandemic, are like, who am I? What drives me? What's my purpose? What's my passion? And they don't know where to go, where to start. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, what a lot of people and what I'm saying is just like, just go out there and see mm-hmm. what you like. And then the more you do things, you'll realize like, no, not it. Or, oh, podcasting. Yes. Mm-hmm. That lights a fire. That does something to me. Right. Mm-hmm. I love your podcast title, which is Radical Audacity. You mentioned it a little bit earlier, but I want to ask, what does that mean? What does radical audacity mean to you?
So audacity often has, people use it in a negative connotation, right? Oh, can you believe she had the audacity to wear those shoes? Oh, can you believe she had the audacity to say that? Can you believe she had the audacity to do that? And it has, people use it in a really negative way, but usually when that person has the audacity to do those things that people are talking negatively about, it's usually kind of cool, you know, like they're speaking out their truth. They're making a stand for something. They're wearing fabulous shoes that nobody else on the planet would wear, but they're wearing these works of art. They're doing their hair in these crazy colors and patterns and maybe getting a fabulous tattoo, maybe going on a round the world trip, taking a 2-year career break and just traveling the world. Like they're doing these things that seem radical to everybody else who's living in their shoulds, who's living in their grays. I had somebody on my podcast who described it, this radical audacity life, as living in technicolor. Mm. And I thought that was so beautiful because when we live in the shoulds, when we are the good girls, and like I said, I wanted so much to be the good girl. But when you're living in that, life can be just really gray and hamster wheel feeling and unsatisfying. And you're doing everything you're supposed to do, everything society says, and you're doing what your parents say, and you're doing what your aunts and uncles say, and you're doing what your religion says, but it's not right for you and it doesn't feel good. And so life in technicolor, life in radical audacity is saying, I'm living my integrity. I'm living in my authenticity. I'm listening to that person inside myself, my inner knowing, and I'm doing what I need to do, even if it's not easy, even if it's difficult, even if it's a little painful. Like for me, leaving my family, leaving my friends at 19 years old, was utterly painful. For 6 months straight, I had nightmares every single night.
Wow.
Because there was just so much pain being released, you know, when I was making my way in a new place all alone. Very similar after my divorce, you know, like you're releasing all of that pain. And I moved from a beautiful home that I had remodeled into a tiny one-bedroom apartment with my two children. You know, it was under 600 square feet with my two children. Right. But it didn't matter. Like the things didn't matter. The big house and the remodeled bathroom and kitchen. Like I said goodbye to them. I cried and said goodbye to them and then embraced my tiny new living quarters because it was mine. and it was right for me. And so that's the very long answer to your question of what is radical audacity. It's different for everybody, but it's you listening to your inner knowing. It's what Glennon Doyle calls, you know, that knowing inside yourself and really taking the time to listen and be curious about what do I really know about this and getting in touch with those feelings.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think for so many of us, and especially as women, like we get so lost in other people's expectations, right? Like you said, other people's shoulds, and we play all these roles in our life. I had a friend of a friend who described her life as, she was like, I feel as though I am the invisible fairy that goes around and makes everything happen. And people just don't even realize that it's getting done, but I'm doing the work, but no one notices in a sense. And so do you have any, I guess, thoughts or tips for people who, let's say, want to be more radically audacious, who want to live in their authenticity and integrity, who don't really know how to amplify that inner wisdom, that inner voice? What should they do to be able to follow those steps to be able to get to a point where they can be like, you know what, this is exactly who I am, and I'm ready to make these big decisions?
I think instead of answering with a bunch of steps, I'm going to answer with a visualization. Yeah, because I think it's really powerful, and it's a visualization that made a big difference for me. So imagine there's this big, beautiful window, and outside the window, it's a beautiful sunny day with a nice cool breeze. And there's a picnic out there with all this food, and oh, you want to be out there, and you're a little fly, right? And you're hitting against this window over and over again, because it's so beautiful and you want to be out there at the picnic, and that's where you want to be. But you're hitting against the window and you can't get out there. And eventually, as that fly, you exhaust yourself and maybe even fall dead to the windowsill, right? And we do that so much. If that fly had zoomed out just a little bit and taken the time, paused and looked around at its surroundings, it would have seen there was a door over there. There was an open window over there. There's a sunroof. Right? That there were multiple paths to get out there to that beautiful picnic. And that would be my answer to people saying, well, how do I live this life? How you live it is you take a pause. You take a step back. This might be setting a boundary with your family and saying, you know what? I'm booking myself into a hotel this weekend by the beach. And for 24 hours, I'm no contact. So dear spouse, you're taking care of the children, and I need time to think. I need time to look. Sumant Kidd in Dance of the Dissident Daughter, she did something very similar. You know, she went away to kind of a spiritual retreat and just took some time away and was like, I need to think through things. She was in this questioning phase and she needed time away from kind of her real life to really think and immerse herself in that listening and inner knowing. So maybe it's giving yourself the luxury of even just 24 hours away or booking a retreat. Maybe it's meeting with a therapist and talking with a therapist. Whatever it is that works in your life for you to take a pause and take a quiet moment that's just for yourself to really reflect on, what is my knowing? What am I thinking? What is inside me? And going to therapy with those questions. You can always get therapy, unpack like your childhood traumas and all that at another time. but spending some time to really kind of go, what's the voice inside me saying? What is it that I want? That's step one. Step two, get comfortable setting boundaries, saying no to people, realizing that your children are perfectly capable of putting their laundry in the washing machine and putting in the dryer and folding. It may be a mess. They may not get it in the right drawers, but they can do it and they can start young and they can do it. Your children are perfectly capable of doing the dishes after dinner. Your spouse is perfectly capable of making dinner and realizing that you don't have to be the one doing everything. And so setting some boundaries. So for instance, I have two children. Monday night is my oldest son's night to clear the table and do the dishes. Tuesday night is my youngest son's night to clear the table and do the dishes. So it's between the two of them is two nights a week. So it's not like all the time. They're in charge of their own laundry. So yeah, it's usually kind of a mess. But you know, when they say, "Mom, I have no shorts to wear," I'm like, you know, it's your responsibility. So you're going to have to figure out how to solve this problem. And that gives them ownership. Like, you're actually giving people a gift when you set boundaries and you stop doing all the things. You're actually being loving to the people around you because you're saying, "I know you're capable of solving this problem. I know you're capable of doing this thing." Children crave responsibility, actually. It makes them feel good. Your spouse doesn't want to be mothered. It's like the ultimate killer of sexual attraction is when you're mothering your spouse. So let them do their thing. Let them make their mistakes. If they say they're going to take the trash out, let them do it on their time, you know, and it may get overflowy, but they said they were going to take the trash out. So you give them the time and space to do that because that's what they said they were going to do. And if it takes a little too long, you know, acknowledge, I know you're a person of your word. And you said you were going to do this thing. And I thank you for keeping your word, you know? And so you can, in a loving way, communicate that you expect them to keep up with their word and then thank them profusely when they're done, because everybody loves gratitude, right? Having gratitude. Thank you, kids, for doing the laundry. Thank you, spouse, for this, whatever chore it is that you did. And so if we live in gratitude, we live with boundaries. And we live with that listening to our knowing, it helps everything.
Yeah, it really, truly does. And what you said in there is so poignant, just the pause and being able to take that for ourselves. And what kept going through my mind when you were talking was this notion of investing in ourselves, right? We don't do it nearly enough. Because we're always trying to make everyone else feel better and please others and fulfill these roles that we've been told by family, religion, society, that we have to be this type of person. We have to achieve these type of things. We have to check these boxes off of some imaginary list in order to, whatever, be worthy. Be good enough, be the best mom, be the perfect spouse, you know, and be really fit and beautiful and have clear skin, whatever it is.
Right.
Right.
There's a long list.
It really is. We could just go on and on and on.
We could. You haven't even scratched the surface of all the shoulds of the things that we're supposed to do.
Right. And just to be able to be like, you know what? F that, you know, and to have that kind of freedom, the audacity, just be like, no, like you guys can deal with this. It's okay. I have so many friends who are parents and mothers, and they worry about taking any time away from being a mom. And I think that is such a gift that women and parents can give to themselves and their families.
I have to say, there are quite a few gifts in divorce. As awful as it is, and as much as it's not a first choice. I mean, if you can make a marriage work, you know, if it's something that you can work together on and have it work, then that's the best case scenario. But with divorce, for me, one of the gifts I was given is, you know, 50% of the time they're with their dad. And I had to learn how to let go of control. I can't control what happens at his house. I will drive myself crazy because he does not run his house the way I run my house. The kids don't have the same rules over there with bedtime and food and video games. And I had to learn to let go of control. One of the best ways I learned to let go of control was to find happy things for me to do and get involved in so that I wasn't overthinking about them. In doing that, I got involved in all of these things that then my children get to see a happy, fulfilled mom who, when they come back home, can say, "How was your weekend? I want to hear about it. I'm so happy to see you." And then I get to share stories and they get to share stories. So they see a happy home mom. They come into a happy home. We get to reconnect. And I realize that while it's not the ideal situation to spend 5 days every other week without my children, it is a little bit of a gift because I learned how to find myself. I learned how to take some space and some time and how healthy it was for me as a mom. And so I would definitely recommend for moms that parents in general, but I think this really is for moms. When you're not divorced, when you are in a two-parent home, you have the right to take time, whether it's going to a dance class, whether it's taking a 24-hour break down at the beach, checking yourself into a hotel, whether it's getting that monthly massage, whether it's going to that book club, whatever it is that fills you up and lights you up, you get to take that time. It's healthy for everybody. It raises your spouse's attraction in you because suddenly you're interesting. You're doing stuff outside of their circle and now they have something to talk to you about and you have something to talk to them about. And there's a little element of mystery when they don't quite know what happened while you, you know, went out for drinks with the girls, you know, and they get to hear your story of you guys dancing and laughing and being silly. And it raises everybody's attraction because you're living joyfully.
Yes. Yes. And even for the listeners out there who are not moms, who are not in, you know, who are single or that sort of thing, it's the same thing, right? Mm-hmm. People see us living truthfully, living joyously, doing the things that we really want to do and that light us up. And then that kind of energy makes them feel like, oh my God, look at this person, you know, yeah. they're totally on a different level. And you can just tell when someone is really stepping into who they are and who they want to become. And you want to be around that person, whether it's platonic or romantic. And like you said, being kind of the role model for the people around us, for them to be like, oh, maybe I could do something similar.
Yeah. And I think sometimes single women, especially, there's a whole different kind of pressure there of, uh-huh. you know, oh, you're ticking biological clock. When are you getting married? When are you having children? When are you doing this? When are you doing that? And, you know, there's jealousy from the friends that have kids and are married and of like, oh, look at your life. You're living, you have nothing to complain about. And there's just a lot of pressure also for those women and a lot of the shoulds pressure. And so to just be able to go, I am so happy with the life I'm living, you know, and if I do find a spouse to share my life with, fantastic. But if I don't, I've got this gorgeous life I'm living fully and I'm traveling and I'm getting the education I want. And I'm getting the experiences I want so that when and if a spouse and children come into the picture, I'm a whole, healthy, happy human. And if they don't come into the picture, I'm a whole, happy, healthy human. And I think there's so much power and beauty in that. And I think that's really hard. There's a lot mm-hmm. of pressure on those women as well.
There is. And I always love to say, like, you know, especially in Hollywood, it's like, oh, you have to find your other half, right? Mm. Implying that we are not whole, happy, healthy humans in and of ourselves, that we need to have this external individual to make us whole, quote unquote. And it's such a weird and codependent kind of way to think about relationships when it should be two people coming together in a partnership, right? And celebrating each other, celebrating the life and creating a future together. And so I totally 100% agree.
Yeah, that line in Jerry Maguire, "You complete me." Oh, I just don't like it at all.
I know. It was really cute when it first came out. I was like, oh, you complete me. It's so romantic. And now I'm just like, oh,
it's not healthy. It's not healthy. Like, we shouldn't have to complete anybody else. We should maybe enhance mm-hmm. somebody's wonderfulness. But if we're in a relationship where we have to complete that person, oh, there's going to be so much codependency and unhealthiness and toxicity. It drives me crazy that Hollywood over and over and over again romanticizes these unhealthy, toxic relationships. I could get in a whole soapbox about that.
I won't do it here. I know.
But I love what you said about being, we are whole people. There is nobody out there that completes us. Our other half is not out there. Maybe our kindred spirit is.
Mm-hmm. Maybe or spirits,
the people that bring joy and kind of fill and enhance our life are out there, mm-hmm. but we are whole and complete on our own.
Yes. I think that is a really lovely place to pause for this section of the interview, because it's that's where it all comes down to. It's just, we are worthy. We are beautiful. We are amazing beings. If we allow ourselves to remember that that is essentially who we are.
Yeah. Right.
Okay. Yeah. So at the end of each interview, we do a few kind of fun questions. So if you're ready.
I'm ready.
You're ready. We can go through it.
I'm ready.
All right. So can you tell me something in your everyday life that you find beautiful or that you're grateful for? Something that perhaps most people would gloss over because it's not necessarily something outstanding, but for you, it's beautiful.
You know, there is this lovely little thing that my partner does. He brings me a cup of hot tea every morning. And it's such a beautiful, sweet little gesture of love. And every single time he does it, I am so filled with gratitude and appreciation. And so for me, I think that's one of those little beautiful moments that I treasure every day so much. And it's really beautiful. And when I have to go to work, he often puts it in a travel mug with a little sticky note that says, I love you, or have a good day. And it just melts my heart. You know, I think it's those little things that your partner can do that are easy to overlook and take for granted. But if we pause and we really appreciate these tiny little showings of love, they really add up to make so much beauty.
So well said, because it's always there. It's there if we look for it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. If we look for the ways people show up for us, there are so many beautiful examples.
Yes.
Every day.
Love that. Perfect. Okay. Question number two, can you tell us something on your bucket list, since this is the Purpose Filter and, you know, I'm in palliative care and that sort of thing. So can you tell us something on your bucket list? And if so, is there something preventing you from crossing it off now or sometime in the near future?
Oh my God. I love this question so much. So a friend and I, her name's Erin Ramsey. She's also a podcaster. We were having this discussion of, should it be bucket list or should it really be live list, right? Like, is this like, So
yes,
she calls
that.
It her live list, which I was like, ooh, I like that. I'm kind of living it right now. You know, I'm living those things I want to do. Since I've had children, I have not gotten to travel internationally. It's a little challenging to do with young children and a divorce because, you know, the partner has the ex has to be okay with it. And there's lots of hoops to cross. So that has been holding me back. However, I have decided that I'm going to travel and I'm going to take the kids and it's going to happen. And I'm going to, whatever needs to happen to have him agree, it's going to happen. And also I'm going to travel without the kids. And I have a friend who is a career break and sabbatical coach who she was on my podcast, so inspired by her. I said, well, what if we plan a retreat together? And she's all, yes. So international travel for me will be happening in September because we're planning an international retreat together. Destination to be determined, but I'm really excited about that because I've, you know, put it out in the universe that I'm doing that. And then for my oldest, I'm taking him abroad for his graduation and I'll bring the little guy too and put it out in the universe that, you know, his dad will let him go and we're going to get the passports and everything's going to be good because I want them to have that gorgeous experience I had when I had that awakening in Sweden. It wouldn't have happened if I hadn't traveled overseas. And I just think international travel is so important, especially in these times when we can forget that there's a whole world out there. And that we are part of it.
Mm-hmm. Speaking to my soul, I love to travel. It's taught me so much in my life, you know, and yeah, I totally agree. And it is going to happen to you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Heck yes.
Heck
and
yes.
saying yes to the opportunities, right? I just listened to that episode that you put out.
Oh my gosh, you're so sweet.
Okay. And finally, last question. What does a life well-lived mean to you?
This, I think, is one of the most gorgeous questions a person can be asked. And it's also one of the hardest. I think a life well-lived is a life where you are living in your authenticity and your integrity. You are going for the opportunities. You put yourself in the proximity of possibility. You put yourself out there. You meet people, you connect, you do things, you live whatever version of a technicolor life that is right for you. For me, that includes connecting with people, that includes travel, that includes learning constantly. I'm just a voracious learner. It includes when the idea fairies come to visit me, I welcome them in and say, hello, nice to meet you. Let's see if we can, you know, you can take a place, come be at home here. And if not, you know, let's help you find a place that should be. That's Elizabeth Gilbert. That was her idea. But, you know, I think it's being open to all those possibilities and embracing them and those voices in our head that say, oh, the logistics, there's just no way you could ever make this happen. No way. Saying, okay, I know you guys are trying to keep me safe and I'm going to wrap you up in a real cuddly blanket and put you over here. I love you. Thanks for keeping me safe. But right now I'm listening to the possibility and opportunity. So to me, that's a life well lived. And it looks so different for everybody, but that's it. And filled with love, 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 yes.
Love, technicolor, all of that stuff. I love it. Okay. Last thing. Is there one last thing, let's say, that you want to leave our listeners with that you want to remind them of before we wrap up?
This life, this purpose filter life, this radical audacity life, this life well lived takes a ton of courage. And it's not always the easiest path. In fact, a lot of times it's difficult. So find your people that are your cheerleaders and your supporters and your heck yes people as you are trying to live your best life, and dig deep for that courage. Don't lose faith. And I know for a fact, Kathy is one of those people. So reach out to her. I'm one of those people. Reach out to me, but
yes,
find
you
your
are.
People. Find your people and dig deep for that courage.
Couldn't have said it any better. So amazing. We're so happy to have you here. Thank you so much, Tiffany. Where can our listeners find more information about you or connect with you?
I would absolutely be so thrilled if your listeners come on over and DM me on Instagram. That's where I'm most active. And I answer every DM. I have so much fun interacting with people. So come on over, say hello. That's my favorite place. I'm Tiffany Kane in all the places, LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook, like I'm all over, TiphanyKane. Feel free to listen to my podcast if you'd like to, but yeah, reach out. I love chatting with people and getting to know people. So I want to hear your story.
Yes, yes, exactly. And I will put all of that information in the show notes. Once again, Tiffany, it's been such a pleasure. Thank you for coming on and speaking your truth and sharing your radical audaciousness with us. And until next time, thank you
so much. Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
That was our show for today. Thank you so much for allowing us to spend some time together. If you like what you heard and you haven't already, please share with a friend, subscribe, rate, and write a review. You can follow us on Instagram at PurposeFilter and on our website, purposefilter.com. Join me next time for another episode, and thanks for listening.